I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. I'm your host, Jason Galloway, with the Wisconsin State Journal and Madison.com. We're here for a little postseason mailbag edition of The Red Zone. Wisconsin beat Miami in the Orange Bowl last week. A great end to a great season. Finished 13-1, the most wins in program history. And, you know, I just wanted to do one more podcast, taking your questions, about, you know, whether it was this past season, next season, the off season, anything really. I just was asked for your guys' questions on Twitter. And we are going to answer them right now. So if you don't follow me on Twitter already, you can follow me at Jason_Galloway and follow our coverage throughout the off season. And the next time we do a mailbag podcast, which may be in the spring, you can get in on that and send me a question for that. But we're going to get to our questions now. The first one is from Yaboyim at EMVicious2. He asks, will wide receivers Cade Green and Emmett Perry be ready for spring 2018? As far as I know, they will be. Now, I don't think the door is really open for either of those guys to contribute much next season, barring injury. You know, I think when you look at Wisconsin's wide receiver core, they've got four guys that are really proven now that you could basically call stud receivers. Quintez Cephas, who was injured at the end of this past season, but he should be definitely good to go by the time, next season starts. Certainly by the summer, I would think he would be 100% by then. And then you have, Kendrick Pryor, who kind of emerged in this second half of the year after Cephas went out. And then A.J. Taylor and Danny Davis, who both played really well this year. And all four of those guys, I wrote my last film room story on Madison.com this week and really kind of highlighted the potential this passing game has over the next couple years to be really good, showing some of the plays that from the Miami game to kind of display that. And all four of these receivers, they're all freshmen or sophomores, and they've all proven that they are really talented guys that can make a big impact over the next two seasons. So, as far as Green and Perry go, they both redshirted this year, so they'll be redshirt freshmen, and they'll have some time to get into the lineup by the time their careers are over. And, who knows? I mean, maybe one of those guys makes a lot of progress. Maybe one or two of the guys that I mentioned earlier, suffer an injury or out for part of next season, and they can get in there and show what they can do. And, we'll have to kind of see how they look this offseason. And obviously we don't get to watch practice during the season, so I don't know. I haven't watched either of those guys. The only time I've really watched those guys, I don't think either of those guys were early enrollees. So basically it was just 2 weeks of practice in August when they first arrived, that we got to see them. And we didn't really see much of those guys at all. Obviously, true freshmen who are a little bit down the pecking order, don't get really much, if any, reps during team drills. And so, I haven't really seen those two guys a lot, to be honest. And we'll have to kind of see, in spring ball and then fall ball coming up, if they can, if they can kind of emerge and start to play a little bit bigger role and earn some reps. Let's see the next one. Bill_Woj at Slow_Creek asks, I hear a lot about UW mission standards are restrictive compared to other Big Ten schools. What exactly are the academic requirements and how do they compare to OSU or Penn State or Michigan? That's a good question, Bill. That hasn't been touched on in a couple years now because it was kind of a big deal when Gary Anderson was here. He lost out on some of the recruits he was going for. And since Chris arrived, he hasn't really had too much of an issue with this because I think he has a good understanding of the admission standards, and he's not going to try to get a lot of borderline guys through the door, I suppose. I think what the admission standards come down to is UW requires a little bit more core classes from high school. From high school students to get in than a lot of other Big Ten schools, and that so I think that's kind of the issue. I don't think it's necessarily a grades thing or a GPA thing necessarily, but Wisconsin requires a little bit more a little bit more of the core classes than the typical NCAA requirements, for whatever reason. And I think every school makes some exceptions. I don't think at any school really it's hard and fast and to where, you know, it's a hard line, and if this guy's one credit short, then you have no chance of you have no chance of getting the guy in. I think you can appeal admissions and make a case for why, you know, a certain student or a certain athlete, you know, should get in and that they could contribute to the university if they're a little off the academic standards. So I just think Wisconsin doesn't make as many exceptions as some other schools, and they do require, you know, a couple more classes than a lot of other Big Ten programs. That's why you see, you know, a couple guys that haven't been able to get it, you know, in the past, you know, like a Craig Evans who ended up going to Michigan State, or a couple other examples in there. That's why that happens sometimes. And, you know, Wisconsin's just not a program that's going to, I guess, budge their admission standards much for athletes. And, you know, they do require a couple extra classes or a couple more things than most Big Ten schools do. So I think that's where some of it may have to do with grades too. I mean, it may have to do with that as well. But I think most of the issues I've heard is just the extra requirements, extra core classes that students have to take to meet UW standards, and the fact that, you know, in some cases in the past, UW hasn't been as, you know, they've been a little bit more reluctant to budge off of those than maybe some other schools. Let's see. Chad Habel, at Chad Habel, asks, typically Badgers don't get 5-star players, but what position and when do you think the next 5-star player comes to Wisconsin? I think that's really hard to predict, because I think it's sort of on an individual basis, right? I mean, whatever the next 5-star player in the state of Wisconsin is, that, you know, if there's a high school player in the state of Wisconsin that was a 5-star player, you know, regardless of his position, I think that would probably be your best bet as to what, you know, the chances they have of the next 5-star coming to Wisconsin. I think if he's an in-state recruit, then I think you got a really good chance. I mean, when you think about Wisconsin, I think you have the best chance at probably an offensive lineman that's a 5-star guy. You know, obviously it's going to be a little bit harder to get a 5-star quarterback, or things like that. But I think if you have an in-state guy or you have a 5-star offensive lineman that knows the tradition that Wisconsin has of developing, you know, offensive linemen and sending offensive linemen to the NFL. I mean, Wisconsin's got, you know, more good NFL offensive linemen than probably anybody right now. And I think that could be appealing to a 5-star recruit that wants to go to the next level and knows that he's capable of doing that. So, you know, anybody that's an in-state recruit, I think Wisconsin has a good shot at. And then, you know, I think those top offensive linemen, if you're talking about getting a 5-star from out of state, I think, you know, offensive line would probably be your best bet of getting a really top guy to come to the Badgers. Snarky Moose at S2000_Moose asks, is Hornibrook's progress likely to help UW attract more quarterback recruits who want to play in a pro-style offense? You know, that's a good question. I guess it's possible. You know, Hornibrook still has a little ways to go as far as, you know, cutting down his mistakes. You know, as far as, you know, if he were to have success over the next couple of years, how much would that help, you know, Wisconsin recruit a quarterback? I'm not really sure it would really move the needle too much. You know, I think you look at, you know, Russell Wilson had about as good a year as you can have, you know, here at Wisconsin in 2011. And I don't think that necessarily, you know, even that didn't necessarily move the needle a whole lot as far as Wisconsin getting top quarterback recruits. You know, I think a lot of that also had to do with the fact that Gary Anderson came in soon after that and was kind of dead set on getting a dual threat guy and kind of missed on a couple guys in that regard, like Austin Kafensis and DJ Gillens and guys like that. So I don't know. I mean, if Hornibrook is really good over the next couple of years and he goes down as he makes a lot of progress and he goes down as an all-time, you know, great Wisconsin quarterback, then, you know, then yeah, sure, that could definitely help them get the next, you know, help them in recruiting to get the next quarterback. But I don't think it's necessarily going to move the needle a lot. I think, you know, I think the very top quarterbacks, you know, probably Wisconsin's probably not first on their radar if they're not from around, you know, if they're not an in-state recruit or from the Midwest. You know, I just don't think that Wisconsin in that run-first, you know, offense is necessarily going to be the most appealing for somebody who doesn't have any connections to Wisconsin or, you know, has every other school coming after them. So, you know, if Hornibrook does well and, you know, and the passing game is explosive over the next couple of years, it could definitely help a little bit. But I don't know if it's, you know, Wisconsin's still going to be a run-first team. They still want to establish the running game first and you know, pass the ball off of that. So that's just the way, you know, Chris's offense works, and that's the way it's, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to change. So I don't know if it's going to move the needle too much, but I am a pretty big fan of Hornibrook, and I think if he can just cut down on the mistakes, then a lot of people who've been criticizing him will kind of, you know, jump to the other side and realize that he is a pretty good player. So we'll see how he develops over the next couple of years. I think he can have a good last couple of years here, but we'll have to see how he, you know, if he can cut down on those mistakes. Rich Sweet at St. Anley, I guess that's Stanley with two A's, 1966. He asks, Jason, based on what you see and hear, who is the most ready to contribute on the defensive line as far as players who haven't seen any slash many snaps in 2017? You know, that's a good question, Rich, because that's going to be one of the big things next season is replacing really three senior defensive ends who have played a lot for this team, and Alec James, Connor Sheehy, and Chikwe Obashi. You know, I think their starting three is going to be just fine. Olivier Songapolu has one more year at nose tackle. And then you have Isaiah Laudermilk, who will step right in, I think, be a really impact player for them next year. And I think Garrett Rand will probably move back to defensive end and have a good chance of starting on the other side. I think that's a more natural position for him, and I kind of just think that's probably what's going to happen. And then you don't have a whole lot of depth after that. You know, I think incoming freshman Bryson Williams, a lot of people, you know, I believe he's going to be an early enrollee. You know, a lot of people think that he has what it takes to play right away and possibly contribute as a, you know, as a true freshman. He's going to be a nose tackle. And if he is able to do that, that would really help, help kind of move Rand to defensive end without any issues, backing up Songapolu. I think Rand has kind of had to play that position, because they haven't had a whole lot of other guys who can do it behind Songapolu really well. And while he's a more natural defensive end, if Bryson Williams can come in and play that number two nose tackle role for you for a year before taking over for Songapolu, I think that would really help. You know, it would allow you to just, you know, make Rand a full-time defensive end and not have to really worry about that number two nose tackle spot. So I guess, you know, going back to your question, you know, the guys who haven't played much at all this year who are ready, I Bryson Williams is a possibility. Now, I haven't really seen him play much at all. You know, Billy Hirschfeld hasn't really played much. He's been in and out, you know, the last couple of years. You know, you'll see a stretch where he plays some and then he doesn't. It'll be interesting to see if he can take sort of the next step and be a really good rotation guy for them. I think that's a possibility. I've been a big fan of Keldrick Preston. Now, I don't know if he's necessarily if they see him as more of an outside linebacker than a defensive end. His home might be at outside linebacker. But as a player, just from the little bit I've seen him in practice, I do like him as well. So if they think he can play defensive end, if he's, you know, bulks up and just becomes a defensive end, I think that could be a possibility of someone who, you know, maybe he wouldn't be ready in 2018, but somebody who I think that you know, could play a role for them down the road. So they're going to have to definitely find some guys who didn't contribute this year to give them some depth at that position. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And I guess those are a couple guys that I've been impressed by. Now, you know, we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens. I'm not really sure. I'm sure there's some guys I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but you know, they're going to have to find some depth there. And I think Bryson Williams coming through and being able to play as a true freshman at nose tackle would be really big for the defensive line if that does come to fruition. Kevin at DC Badger 7 asks, Can you talk about the defensive line depth chart and who may contribute at nose tackle and defensive end? In the Orange Bowl, sure looked like Rand and Laudermilk were versatile enough to play all three spots. What does depth look like? Yeah, I guess I pretty much just answered that. I should have looked ahead at this question too, but Yeah, like I said earlier, Randall Laudermilk, I do think they are, you know, you said they're versatile enough to play all three spots, and I don't think they're going to use those two guys at nose tackle. You know, they could use Rand there. Obviously, Rand has been the number two guy there, the last couple years. So we'll have to see if they end up switching him. I think they will, and I think if, like I said before, I think if Bryson Williams is ready to play as a true freshman, that would really help, and they could just move Rand over to end and have a little bit more depth in that spot. So that's kind of how I see it. You know, we'll have to see when spring practice starts exactly how they're lining up and if Rand really is a defensive end again or if they're keeping him in nose for the time being. So that's something we'll have to wait on, you know, wait till the spring and see exactly how they're lining up and what their thought process is there. Snarky Moose at S2000_Moose, he asks, do you have any idea if Jim Leonard sees himself long-term as a pro coach or as a college coach? You know, I don't know that specifically. I have talked to Leonard, you know, a couple times this past month, you know, about job opportunities and his future in coaching. And, you know, he basically, you know, he didn't really necessarily, you know, reveal whether he's, you know, his interest in the NFL or whether he would rather coach in college or the NFL. But he did, you know, I did ask him about, you know, whether he had a desire to be a head coach or not. And he actually surprisingly seemed a little bit hesitant to say that he would actually want to be a head coach. He seemed like that was something he actually wasn't really sure about, at least not right now. You know, I think that he was saying that, you know, it's a lot bigger time commitment and he asked, you know, that would be something he'd have to really consider with his family and everything. And I think eventually he will probably be a head coach, but I think he really likes the teaching aspect. He really likes getting with the DBs and teaching those guys technique. I think he really loves that part of coaching. And I think that as a head coach, you know, you get a little bit more logistic stuff and you maybe wouldn't be doing quite as much of the, you know, I guess, pointed on-field teaching that he's doing with the defensive backs right now. And I think he really likes that. And so I think he's really happy being a coordinator right now. And I think eventually maybe at some point in the future he steps up and wants to be a head coach, but I think he's really happy where he is. And, you know, as far as the NFL goes, I know he only retired from the league a few years ago, and he's got a lot of relationships and with people in the league still and knows a lot of people. And I'm sure that there's going to be interest in him for jobs at the next level. So we'll have to see if anything comes of that. You know, as of right now, it's gone on long enough and it looks like he's not going to take the Florida State job or the Texas A&M job. So I think that if I had to guess now, I would say he's probably going to be back at least one more season. I didn't really expect him to jump ship this quickly for a defensive coordinator job at another college, even if that job did pay more money like Florida State would have or Texas A&M would have. But I do think, you know, obviously the NFL is sort of a wild card. If he gets a really good opportunity in the NFL, that could change things. And obviously those jobs opened up more recently than a lot of the college jobs. So we'll have to see over the next week or so whether any of that plays out. But as of right now, I'd guess that he's back for another year. And, you know, I definitely could see him in the NFL at some point, but I think he's definitely happy where he is right now. Brian Van Denson at B Vandenson asks, do you expect significant raises for Chris Rudolph or Leonard, other assistants like Gilmore? Will Bostad switch back to O-line and bring in one new linebacker coach for inside and outside linebackers? I'll start with the first question. Significant raises for Chris Rudolph or Leonard. I do think Leonard will get a raise. He is, you know, with this only being his second year coaching, he was making less money, actually, I think significantly less money than Justin Wilcox would have made this year if he had not gone to Cal. So I think he's going to get a pretty decent size raise, Leonard is. I couldn't give you a number right now, but I would be pretty surprised if after what he did this year and with the interest that's been surrounding him for other jobs, I would be really surprised if he didn't get a raise. Now, UW actually did give pretty decent raises to Kristen Rudolph last offseason. I kind of went under the radar a little bit. I think it was in February or March of last season or last year. And, you know, I think Chris got a raise of, I think it was $500,000 a year. I can't remember exactly how much Rudolph went up, but so maybe those guys get a bump again, but since they just did last offseason, maybe not. So I think Leonard's definitely going to be bumped up. He's making, I'll have to check my numbers, but I'm pretty sure he's making less than Rudolph right now. So I think he'll be raised up more in that neighborhood of where Rudolph is. You could definitely see other assistants get bumps too. That definitely, I think that could definitely happen. Gilmore has done a really good job, and I think that there could be interest in Gilmore for other jobs as well. Some of these other NFL jobs, there's been a lot of head coaches who have been fired in the NFL, and I think, once they hire new head coaches and they need to fill an entire staff, then, Gilmore's a guy that's been, in NFL circles before, and he's been at that level, and so he's got some relationships, and that could definitely happen. So I think that maybe they could bump his salary up to kind of give him an incentive to stay a little longer as well, because he's done a really good job not only recruiting for them but coaching the wide receivers, and they've got a really good young group of wide receivers, and if they're able to hold on to Gilmore, that would be really beneficial for them. As far as Bostad switching back to the O-line, or in hiring just a straight-up linebackers coach for both inside and outside, I think in a way it would make sense for Bostad to coach the offensive line again. That's where he's, most comfortable, it seems like. That's where he has the most experience and everything, I don't think they will. I think hiring John Budmeyer as the quarterback's coach and having only one more hire to do something like that where you switch Bostad back and bring in a linebackers coach, it just seems to make more sense. If you did that, you'd have Bostad and Joe Rudolph kind of both coaching the offensive line, and you'd have, one linebackers coach coaching two very different positions. And, in a 3-4, the outside linebacker and inside linebacker positions are very, very different. And I think it makes a little bit more sense to have one linebackers coach if you play a 4-3. But I think in the 3-4 system, you probably want different guys doing inside and outside linebackers. So I don't think they're going to do that. I guess it's possible they could still shuffle things around. But I think the best bet is probably for them to just bring in a new outside linebackers coach. We'll see what happens. I'm sure they'll probably sort that out over the next week or two. Let's see. Elliot Nimzen at Nimzen. Sorry, I can't say names. So predict the 2018 depth chart. Do you see Christ running empty back with four wide receivers? I feel like it would be a match of nightmare. We did it this year with tight end. Yeah, well, I'm not, I don't know if I'm going to predict the entire 2018 depth chart right now. I'm sure I'll do that before spring practice starts. But you asked, do you see Christ running empty back with four wide receivers? I think that definitely could happen. Now, to go four wide receivers, you don't necessarily have to, you still have one more spot. You could have a running back and four wide. Wisconsin did go five wide this year with three receivers, Fumagalli and then a running back. I think they had not a lot, but sometimes when they went five wide, they had, Fumagalli and Ibrahim as two of the guys out wide with three receivers. But I think they haven't really played, this group of four wide receivers we mentioned earlier with, Cephas, Davis, Pryor, and Taylor, they haven't all four really played at the same time. I think right when Pryor got his opportunity and kind of emerged, it was mainly because, Cephas was out, and he was, that's kind of when Pryor got his opportunity. And, he had caught a couple passes before that, but, or maybe he hadn't actually, I'm not really sure. But now that when Cephas gets healthy and these four guys go into the next season, it is going to be interesting to see how they use those four guys when they're healthy. I think that because they're a team that just doesn't play four wide receivers at the same time, but all four of these guys, I think all four have earned playing time. You hear Chris all the time, when guys, earn playing time, we're not gonna not play them. So I don't know if they're going to do a whole lot of four wide matchups. They might do that on occasion. Like you said, it can be a matchup problem. But I think that, I think also if you do run that, with the rules in college football now, and when you substitute, the defense has an opportunity to substitute. I think if they see those four wide receivers go in, they'll change their personnel too, and it probably won't. They can make it where the matchup is not as, you know, is not as favorable as you would think if you just put four wide receivers on the field against a base defense, then yeah, it would be, you know, a matchup nightmare. But, you know, if you put in four wide receivers and they just counter it with six defensive backs, then, you know, maybe it won't be as much of a matchup advantage as you would hope. So I do think they're going to play all four. I just think they're going to maybe rotate them a little bit more. I don't necessarily think, I think they will try something. You know, they had, like I said, they went five wide sometimes. I think maybe instead of having Ibrahim out there, you know, Ibrahim's not going to be around. He was a senior this year, but instead of having a running back out there, maybe you have four wide receivers in Penniston in that formation that they ran this year. So I think they'll try, you know, certain scenarios where all four are out there, but I think mostly they'll probably stick with their normal offense and play two and three wide receivers and just kind of, I think just rotate them more, keep them fresh, give all four of them opportunities, and it just gives you the depth where if one or two of them get injured, then you're still in good shape. Let's see. David Jurgensen asks, who will be our top three defensive backs? Well, you know, Dakota Dixon's coming back. I would guess that he's probably your best defensive back. You know, he's the only starter returning. He'll be a three-year starter. Dante Carey-Williams is almost certainly going to be your number one cornerback, it looks like. You know, Nick Nelson is leaving early for the NFL, and Derek Tindall is going to be gone. So I'd have to think maybe he would rank as your number two defensive back. Everybody else really has hardly any experience, if any experience. You know, I think your best bet to start alongside Dixon is probably Patrick Johnson, you know, if he can get healthy. And I think at cornerback you have, you know, Madison Cone is a guy who was a true freshman this year, and they burned his red shirt, you know, even though he didn't play much because they wanted to get him some experience this year so he could be as ready as possible going into 2018, because they knew there's a good possibility that Nelson would leave, I think, and that, you know, obviously Tindall was going to be gone being a senior. So I think that number two cornerback spot is, you know, I think Madison Cone and possibly Caesar Williams are going to be competing for that spot, and I think Patrick Johnson is going to be probably your number one candidate to start at safety alongside Dixon. I think Eric Burrell is another candidate there who could possibly play that position. So as far as, you know, who your third best defensive back is, that's going to be a good question. And even Kerry Williams, excuse me, is a guy that, you know, a guy that that doesn't have a whole lot of experience. And he played a lot of snaps this year as the nickel corner, but to step up and be the number one guy and is a different story. So I think it's going to be, that's going to be probably the biggest question with this team next year is, you know, this is the same as 2 years ago too. It was, can they replace three starters in the secondary? How are all the new players in the secondary going to fare? Can they survive? You know, are they going to give up a bunch of big plays in the passing game? And that was the same question 2 years ago going into the 2016 season. And it turned out that everything was fine and those guys stepped up and Wisconsin had a much better season than everybody anticipated. So we'll see if that's the same situation, you know, next season or if those guys are not ready yet. Let's see. Colin at Colin Rutkowski 1. He asks, who do you see being the backup running back behind Jonathan Taylor? That's a really good question. You know, I mean, I think Bradrick Shaw this year was kind of your number two guy for a while. And then when he got injured, Chris James kind of came back in the fold. Those were the two guys that were supposed to be, you know, competing for the starting job coming into this year. They were competing for the starting job before Jonathan Taylor kind of, you know, took it away from them. But I also think Nakia Watson, the incoming true freshman, actually has a real possibility here to contribute early. You know, I think that I don't think he's going to be an early enrollee, which would have helped him. But, you know, the early signing day in December, you know, Chris mentioned that on BTN, he mentioned that Watson was could be a really good compliment to Jonathan Taylor, and that Taylor was excited they got him. And, you know, to already be talking about a true freshman like that as sort of a compliment to your Heisman candidate. Now, he could have been talking about in the future, you know, and I'm you know, maybe Chris James and Bradrick Shaw are still going to be ahead of him, you know, coming into this year. But, you know, I think that I would give Watson a chance. Now, I haven't seen much of him yet. The incoming freshman, I don't really know. I couldn't tell you a whole lot about exactly how good they're going to be. It's not like I've sat down and, you know, gone and watched their games and watched a ton of film on them. But I think Chris did seem really excited to get him, and I think that based on his comments, you know, maybe he's a guy that will have an opportunity to back up Taylor. But, you know, it's a good question. I think it's going to be a real race to see who is the number two running back, possibly between Watson and then Shaw and James as well. It's going to be a race. I think one of those three guys, you know, I think Tywon Deal is another guy who people are interested in to see if he can bounce back. He just can't stay healthy. He can't really stay on the field, and he's had a lot of ankle issues. And as of right now, I'd have to think that he's probably not going to factor in too much, with all those guys. You know, I think until he can prove he can stay healthy and try to beat those guys out in practice, I just don't have a whole lot of faith, you know, that's going to happen at the moment. So we'll have to, you know, we'll kind of have to see if he's able to get in the mix. But I think it's probably going to be between Shaw, James, and possibly Watson to be the number two guy and get reps. And I think it's, you know, Groshek is going to, you know, Garrett Groshek is going to work in there too. He's a guy that, you know, impressed for a few weeks earlier in the season and kind of faded down the stretch, but as far as the number of carries he was getting. But he's also a guy that's, I thought made a couple of plays in big moments this year, and he could sort of get into that mix as well. But it's going to be an interesting battle. I couldn't predict right now exactly who's going to be the number two guy, and I just named four guys. If you include Deal, it's five guys who you could, you know, potentially see as, you know, competing for the number two job at least, and you know four guys, or I guess three guys that, you know, have at least shown that they're capable of going out there and performing at this level. You know, probably four guys that have, along with Taylor, that have proven that. And you can't really get five or six guys, you know, reps in a game. So it's going to be really interesting to see who kind of works their way into the rotation, who doesn't next year, and what kind of load Taylor takes. You know, I think that's another question. Are they going to give him 30 carries a game, or a couple of these guys I mentioned behind him, going to show enough where they feel comfortable giving them a little bit more of a load and taking a little pressure off Taylor? So that's definitely something to watch going into next year. Craig at Cobra Badger asks, how are Tywon Deal and Sam Brodner looking at running back for 2018? Will they participate this spring? Now, we're not sure yet if they're going to participate in spring practice. I think their injuries have happened, you know, long enough. You know, Brodner's injury was, I believe it was in the summer this past year. And you'd have to think, a full year would be enough to get over that injury. Now for the spring, I'm not really sure if he'll be ready or not, or how much he'll be able to do. I'm sure they'll probably still at least limit him, even if he is, you know, healthy enough to do some things. With Deal, he's a guy that looked like he was going to come back from being injured the year before and ended up having to shut it down and get surgery again. And so we'll have to see how he bounces back from that. You know, no word yet on exactly if he's, what he's going to do in the spring or if he'll be ready for that. But, like I mentioned earlier, it's kind of hard to kind of trust that he's going to be able to stay healthy. But again, those two guys, there's a lot of competition at that position. And, if those guys can't stay healthy, even if they're healthy by the start of the season, it's going to be, they're really going to get behind the eight ball if they're not able to participate in spring and be healthy in the off season. So you hope that those guys are back by spring, but we'll have to wait and see. And, those guys are kind of behind right now, trying to compete with so many other, you know, people at the position, but we'll see if they're able to factor in come spring practice and fall camp. Let's see. We're going to end here with a couple questions from Todd Romance at Todd Romance. Let's see. His first one is, are players ever asked to give up their scholarships if they don't play much since their first couple of years and it's been determined by the staff that their contribution will be minimal going forward? I can't confirm that anybody is asked to give up their scholarship. You know, I definitely think that sometimes you get a situation where guys are asked not to take their final year. Like, I think even Joe Ferguson, earlier this season, told me that you know, obviously his you know, the first few years of his career hadn't really gone how he planned, and he had suffered some injuries, and he was afraid going into this past season that he was going to be asked not to take his fifth year, which would basically mean a guy who's, you know, maybe redshirted his first year, has graduated, but that, you know, maybe isn't going to contribute, and so you get a scholarship a year early if they decide not to, you know, not to play their fifth year. Kind of opens up a scholarship for you. So I can't really say how often that happens or if it happens much at all. I think for Ferguson to say that makes me think that, you know, it's something that does happen. I don't think it's a situation where I think it's done in a, I think it's done in a manner where I still think it would be, you know, the kid's choice. You know, I don't think they're going to just, let me put it this way. I don't think they're just going to pull a scholarship from a kid, especially if he hasn't graduated, doesn't have his degree. I don't think they're going to go to a true junior, redshirt sophomore, you know, and say, you know, you haven't been contributing, you need to give up your scholarship like that. I don't think that necessarily happens, but I think maybe there are situations where, you know, maybe there's an agreement between a player and the staff to not, you know, not take their final year, or if they're not going to contribute, or things like that. I don't think it's a really common occurrence, but maybe that does happen in some situations. Let's see. His next question is, so how come starting in 2016 we will play Michigan 6 years in a row, with the other division having 7 teams and each team playing 3 crossover games? The statistics say we should play them a little less than every other year. Sorry about that. That's a really good question. You know, that's something I kind of want to look at in this offseason. I don't really know why the schedule is so random like it is. You know, you would think that it's a little bit more of a natural rotation. You play these 3 teams, and then you play, you know, a different 3 teams, or maybe it cycles through where one goes off the schedule, one comes on, but you only play a team, you know, 3 years in a row before you don't play them again for a while. I think maybe changing the divisions, you know, a few years ago may have kind of messed things up a little bit, but it seems like by now you should be on a little bit more of a normal schedule. So that's something I probably am going to look into this offseason and kind of see, because I did notice that recently, like, they're playing Michigan, and Todd says it's 6 years in a row. I haven't double checked that, but they are playing them a lot of years in a row, probably more than it seems like that makes sense. So that's something I'll look into. I'm not really sure exactly why it's like that, but that's something I'll figure out. And then his last one was, there were quite a few times that Alex Hornibrook could have got first downs with his feet if he looked for it in the Orange Bowl. Seems scrambling is the last thing he looks for. As Aaron Rodgers seems to really like the Badgers, do you think he would invest a few days with Alex Hornibrook to teach him when to look to run? You know, there are situations where Hornibrook probably could run where he doesn't, but I think those are kind of few and far between. And I think a guy that's not super mobile, that doesn't run a whole lot, it's never going to be his first instinct. And so I think there probably are a few times where he could tuck it and run a little bit more often and doesn't, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't think he's leaving that many yards on the table by not running as much. Now, as far as Rodgers goes, you know, I think he's probably more involved with the basketball team. I haven't really seen him around the football team too much. I'm sure he, you know, he does seem interested in the Badgers, but as far as, I don't really expect him to be, you know, taking Alex Hornibrook under his wing and spending time with him or anything like that. You know, maybe that could happen, but I really don't expect it to. And, you know, I definitely don't think you can expect Alex Hornibrook to do the things Aaron Rodgers does. You know, a lot of those things Rodgers does, you just can't teach. You know, and he's a lot more athletic and a lot more mobile than Hornibrook, obviously. And I know Todd's not saying that, you know, Hornibrook needs to be Rodgers, but I do see what you're saying with, you know, there are situations where maybe he could take off and run where he's not really looking for it, but I don't think it really matters too much as far as, I don't think there are that many opportunities that he's missing. He's not a super fast guy. I think there are some situations where he throws an incompletion where if he had tried to scramble, maybe he could have got a few yards, but I haven't seen any, I don't remember any, you know, egregious examples in the Orange Bowl where, he was in a situation where if he had tucked the ball and ran, he could have picked up, you know, 10, 15 yards where, you know, instead he threw an incompletion. So I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it would really be, you know, a huge improvement to his game if he learned to look for running lanes a little bit more. I don't think he's ever really going to be a scrambler, you know, it, and I don't really expect Aaron Rodgers to spend a whole lot of time with him, but who knows? Maybe someday he will, and Hornibrook can become a little bit more mobile, but I think he's more of a pocket passer. I think you just kind of, I know a lot of Badgers fans are, you know, a little, they're kind of itching for a quarterback with more mobility. And I do think in the Orange Bowl, Hornibrook did kind of show, you know, he did escape pressure a few times and make a couple really nice plays on the run. I thought he played a really good game. And I kind of mentioned this in my film room story earlier this week on Madison.com that, you know, this really wasn't like the BYU game. I think statistically you can kind of compare this to the BYU game as two of the best games he's played this year. But this was a lot different than that game. I mean, I think in that BYU game, he was, you know, sitting in the pocket with a ton of time to throw on most plays and kind of picking out an open receiver on, you know, against a bad defense. And this Miami defense, you know, averages more sacks per game than anybody in the country. They get after the quarterback. He did have to escape pressure a couple times. And I think he was a little bit more mobile and a little bit more aware in the pocket than maybe he has been in the past. I think it was an encouraging sign in that regard. So I think he's making progress. I think he's going to have a really good season next year if he can cut down on some of the mistakes. So we'll see how much progress he makes. And I don't think he's definitely never going to be a scrambler, but I think there are definitely improvements he's been making and can continue to make. All right, that's it. That was a long mailbag, but hey, it's the off season now, so we have time for it. So we probably won't do another podcast again until closer to spring practice. You know, keep checking, you know, iTunes and Google Play and my Twitter account at Jason_Galloway. We'll definitely still have some coverage of, you know, signing day coming up. You know, obviously there's not going to be a whole lot of action going on with 19 guys already signed in December, but we'll definitely still have some stories on any action that we might see from Wisconsin over the next couple weeks. You know, again, keep visiting Madison.com for all of our covers throughout the off season, and I will talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.